This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchel with Red Memories author Tanya Bronigan, The Afterlives of China's Cultural Revolution. Tanya, reporting for The Guardian many years in China, had occasion to talk to people remembering the Cultural Revolution. We introduce Wang Shilin, a musician, a self-taught composer, and yet the child of peasants who had no advantages whatsoever that I can see. One day, of course, there was an opportunity nearby, a traveling circus is what I imagine, a traveling orchestra. And he was so inspired, he ran away and became a member of the PLA, the People's Liberation Army. And yet the story is not straightforward. In fact, Tanya, his story is so unbelievable. Only fact could hold this up. In a novel, it would be unacceptable. There's no verisimilitude. He remembers all of this period, as you say, liberating, but it also gave him opportunity, though there were moments where he was punished and brutalized. Is that how he remembers it? Both, it made me what I am, and then I remember the bad times at the same time.
Yes, I mean, I think what's so striking about Wang Shilin's story is that in many ways it's almost quite typical, in that he was somebody who was very devoted to the party, a really zealous party member. He was very keen in political campaigns. He thought other people were not true believers, perhaps. He spent a lot more time, despite his talents in music, initially he spent a lot more time on political campaigning than he did upon his studies. And yet the party turned upon him, as it did so many of the people. I mean, bear in mind, both of Mao's heirs apparent would die in the Cultural Revolution. Many of the most senior leaders were persecuted or died again. So in that sense, Wang Shilin was perhaps quite a typical case, that all the years he had given to the party really counted for nothing once he was seen to have erred and once he was seen to be politically fallible. He really became the lowest of the low. And because that happened in a political campaign shortly before the Cultural Revolution, then he was really target number one when the Cultural Revolution started. He was already in trouble. They knew, in their view, that he was already a bad sort. And so the persecution really intensified. It became not only political denunciation, but a very brutal campaign. He was taken from town to town for what were known as struggle sessions. This is where people would be up in front of a huge crowd and would be first denounced and criticized, but then also beaten and attacked by people who were watching. His suffering was such that he believed that he would die. And in fact, many of the people he was held with did die in that period, either killed, executed, or in other cases, people who killed themselves because they were really driven to suicide. It's quite extraordinary that he survived. So the party in many ways gave him everything, because it trained him up, it gave him his career. He still draws upon that, the musical heritage as a composer, and yet at the same time it took everything away from him.
His first work as a composer is not performed for 37 years. Mm-hmm. And while you're interviewing him, he goes in the other room and brings it back to show to you. But at some point, right then, he grows extremely upset and unhappy. It reminded me of the scene with you. He raises his voice and he speaks harshly. What happened?
He felt that perhaps I didn't really understand the subject. So I had asked whether it was the fact it was written by him that was the problem, or whether it was also the style of music, because even the style of music could damn something. I was really trying to understand what in particular it was about this work that had been controversial. And he became extremely angry and said, you know, they were persecuting people, they were killing people, you know, what don't you understand? And I think obviously that reflects a sense that even though all the people I speak to in Red Memory are people who have chosen to remember the Cultural Revolution, to keep that memory alive in some way, remembering can nonetheless be a very difficult and painful experience. But also this sense that in many of the people I met, that it's just so hard for anybody to understand if they didn't live through it. Another of my interviewees said to me, you know, it's like reading a really difficult book and even young Chinese people can't do it. And the thinking being, you know, how can you as a foreigner sort of hope to come in and understand this? So it's such an intense subject. Many people don't even discuss it with their families. Many people have said to me that they've asked their grandparents about what happened and their grandparents just get angry. Of course, it was such a horrific time in many ways that for many people, it's just too fraught and too distressing to talk about. And when it does, it arouses strong emotions.
His daughter is also a composer, but she lives in Germany, as you yes. lives in America. As Song Binbin herself moved to America, she's now back in Beijing. So going overseas is an escape for them, makes them feel safer. They have their memories when they're overseas. How does it work? We have about a minute.
It's been a very mixed picture, I think. Clearly, some people find it easier to talk about what's happened when they've moved overseas. And certainly, a psychotherapist said to me that he's had people who've said to him, I could never talk about this at home, even sort of 30, 40 years after the events. But now I'm in another country, I feel I can address this. But for other people, I think simply time, distance has made them want to talk about what happened. So it was a very mixed picture, really.
Wang travels with his daughter. And when Tanya asks him where he's been, he says, Auschwitz. They went to Poland and Austria. He says it loudly and ironically, Auschwitz. That is an experience the children of Auschwitz do have, and the grandchildren of Auschwitz of the Holocaust do have memories similar to the children and grandchildren of these victims of the Red Guard period, both Red Guards themselves and victims. So what I learned from Tanya's book is that it ain't over. It ain't ever over. As the way it goes, the past isn't even past. We're going to turn now to two princelings who were also victims of the Red Guard, now very prominent names in the People's Republic of China. The book is Red Memory. Tanya Bronigan is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.